Well, last week I promised an extended pro-Advent rant this morning, as I recall. That falls under hyperbole for a couple of reasons. One is that I'm not a ranter. And anyway, in our culture, we don't usually use the word rant about something positive, right? Is that fair, linguistically? But I do want to spend some time in a more extended exploration of why Advent matters in the 21st century. Mostly because I think we need it now more than ever. Had another conversation with somebody this past week who grew up churched. Woman's in her 20s. She said, I don't think I'd ever even heard of Advent until about a year ago. So we know which tradition she didn't grow up in, or traditions, but There's lots of folks to whom what Advent is on about is relatively new terrain. I was grocery shopping this past week, which means, among other things, that I was getting bombarded by seasonal music. And I have some friends, shall remain nameless, who absolutely adore the music that goes with Christmas. In at least one household I know of, not from this community, just saying. The negotiating about how early the Christmas music can come out is extensive. And I believe that a workable compromise has been reached. So now both parties are, as Stranger Things reminded us in season two, halfway happy. Personally, I'm ambivalent about that whole thing. Because although to me some of the music that goes with Christmas feels beautiful and substantial and enduring for all sorts of good reasons, a lot of it seems like either just sentimental mush or just a really egregious cash grab for the artist. Maybe that's too cynical. In any case, this past week I was grocery shopping and I was feeling a bit awash in Christmas music. And then I had two experiences in quick succession that kind of made me think a little differently than I was thinking. First of all, I met this guy who was coming down the aisle toward me, and he had an expression on his face with which I'm familiar, which is that "where is that item" expression. You know, the one thing on your list that you can't find in the gigantic store, and he's kind of, you know, he's trying to read the micro labels. You know, like he's looking hard for whatever the thing is that he can't find. And then just so we're going opposite directions, right? So just as he kind of goes past me, Michael Bublé is beginning to comes on the sound system in the store, and he just starts singing along. He's boop, and I totally unselfconscious. It wasn't a performance. It wasn't for anyone. I don't even know if he knew. Like honestly, the song was just inside of him somewhere, and when he heard the opening notes, out it came. It was so utterly unvarnished and unselfconscious. It was just this lovely kind of refreshing. Oh, that's kind of, and I don't want to use the word cute, but it was kind of cute, right? Like, it was just something about it that was so disarming. It was so charming. And then a few steps later, same aisle, I meet this small, determined-looking woman coming my way. Michael's still singing. It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas. And as I meet her, she's singing too, kind of under her breath. And she's singing. She's kind of singing upstream. She's singing, "Amazing Grace." Breath, like right into the teeth of "it's beginning to look a lot like Christmas," you know, and I was just kind of on tilt. I'm like, what's going on in aisle 22? It was just so strange. I walked away kind of wondering if maybe the woman in particular felt like she needed to fight back, like she needed to sort of try to salvage something that maybe felt, I don't know, spiritual to her in the middle of the racket of this time of the year. I don't know that, but that's kind of what I was wondering about. And partly I was wondering about that because sometimes that part can feel like a bit much, right? Like the noise, I mean. I don't know about you, but sometimes what I feel like is I need some kind of a filter. I need some way to separate the meaningless noise from the stuff that matters. And what I want to suggest to you this morning is that Advent, if we engage with it at all, can function like a kind of filter. And in fact, I think it can function like more than one kind of filter. But since we're already talking about it, let's start with Advent as a filter for noise. I saw a documentary film a few years ago about a family who spent a year living in a very remote cabin in Alaska, so sort of a self-sustaining venture, the four of them. So no electricity, no communication of any kind with the outside world, no running water unless you ran for it. Like it was pretty bare bones kind of existence. The wife of the couple is a filmmaker, and so that was part of the nature of the venture. And the film is this fascinating combination of compelling, necessary activity and the most beautiful sorts of stillness. Like just this enormously spacious quiet. And I was captivated enough by the film to kind of track the filmmaker for a while afterward. And I remember reading an interview with her in which she described what re-entry was like after a year without, you know, all the accoutrements of contemporary society. And she talked about being back home in her home in Anchorage, and one day she was standing in her kitchen talking with a friend of hers, and she was startled by this tremendously loud noise. And it really kind of, she's like, what? She's like, what was that? What was that? Was that a plane? And her friend says, that was your fridge. And I mean, most of us don't notice that noise, the hum of the fridge, right? Unless it sounds like the compressor's dying. But I mean, it's just a hum, just kind of this drone, right, in our lives. It's just background noise, unless we step away from it for a while, and then our perspective and our experience of it change. And that change in perspective, that's something that we need in order to be well as humans. Someone asked me mid-November if there was anything new in my life. They weren't probing, it was just that friendly. So anything new going on for you? And I wanted to give them a real answer, which is what I try to do with questions like that. So I thought about it a bit, and I realized that although I find my life generally very engaging and very interesting, for which I feel really grateful, that late fall, early winter time of the year, that can feel like a longish chunk of routine. And I don't know if you know this feeling, but when I'm in that space, what it feels like is, you know, you get up, you go to work, you come home, you make dinner, you take the kids places, you try to get a few chores done after that around the place, because if you don't, it falls apart, and then, you know, eat, sleep, repeat, right? And it can kind of get to this place where if you don't pay attention, all of life can start to feel like the noise from the fridge. Like it's just this low-grade drone that is unremarkable in every way. We're not the first people in history to have that kind of an experience, of course. If you want to try to imagine an ancient story of life turning into meaningless repetition, you could do worse than to try to imagine what it must have been like for the Israelites when they were tasked with making bricks in Egypt. Lots of us know this story. The Hebrew people at this point, they're enslaved by the Egyptians, and that's their job. They're making mud bricks. All those awesome Egyptian ruins are a testament to outstanding mathematics and a lot of slave labor. And so life was, you know, all bricks all the time. That was not just an indices, but the framework for their particular slavery. And when they finally get out of that story and they're wandering around in the desert and they're wondering how to live without the routines that they were enslaved to, and it's a fascinating part of the story because at a couple of points in the story, it turns out that they miss the routines so much that they want to go back to the slavery. Huh. That's important information. While they're wandering around in the desert trying to sort it out, one of the things that the story tells us is that God gives them some commands to help with that. And one of the most important and urgent commands in that collection is that you need to take a day and seven to not just work, work, work. So that's the shape of the commandment. And that day in the commandments is called, and in the culture from which we have those, is called Sabbath, which, as I've said here before, basically means stop. At its root, it's not a very complicated word. And in fact, it's not even necessarily a religious idea. It's step away from the noise, go to the cabin in the woods, sing your own song in the teeth of the carol, ask what it is you're a slave to and haven't even noticed, and then try to stop it and see if you miss it. Just do something to break up the stultifying drone of same old, same old. The ancients didn't just know about work. they also knew that meaningful change doesn't come overnight. It takes time. And so, among other things, out of a couple of thousand years of history, we have the thing that we call Advent, which is, in the tradition, a month of conscious waiting, a month of anticipation, a month of already not yet, a month of not business as usual. That can be a filter for the background noise of consumer Christmas, a filter for sentiment without substance, a filter for unmeetable expectations, a filter for futile attempts to, you know, drown our sorrows in eggnog. Unless we change our routine, including the standard behaviors of the prevailing culture at this time of the year, even something like Christmas for anyone that may have as their faith practice, Christianity, can just get to be part of the drone. And I sometimes feel like the potential of Advent to give us a break, to prompt us to review or reconsider or reflect or recalibrate, I sometimes feel like those potentials are getting sucked into the same kind of shop till you drop ethos that, you know, starts on Black Friday and it thunders along through cyber whatever day, people tag it with, and it just kind of carries on until the lights go out on New Year's Eve. And if you think that's a bit grim, which you may, I would invite you to reflect for a moment on the new wave of Advent calendars that are out there. So historically, Advent calendars existed to help us to stop, even if it's just for a few moments every day, to reflect, to break up the routine, consider what's wrong with this story, what it might look like for things to change. But I've been noticing this trend around new ways to make Advent yet another reason to spend money. We've probably all heard about Advent calendars that offer something unique for every day of the month leading up to Christmas. Candy has been standard fare in these for a long time, of course, right? It is in our house. Chocolate-covered raisins are in there. And the kids were just like stoked this year because we started 3 days late, so there was like a three-day backlog of chocolate-covered raisins. But you can also get Advent calendars that offer you a different kind of scotch every day, to the tune of many, many thousands of dollars. There are Advent calendars that are keyed to scotch that are worth a fortune. Well, they cost a fortune. And perhaps because that's not novel enough, there's a company in Vancouver that's now offering an Advent calendar that offers you a different kind of edible cannabis product every day of Advent. Yeah, the weed Advent calendar. How awesome is that? I don't know. How awesome is that? It's about $200, and there's like a 1,500-person waiting list as of last week. The operator of this particular business said, we didn't expect it to be this big a hit. She didn't sound sad at all. It kind of gives a whole new meaning to the need for a filter for Advent. Anyways, I remember, I thought that was clever. Thank you, Steve. You can stay. I remember when I first heard about the definition of music, that music was just organized sound. And I remember, as a person who loves music, I remember kind of being a little, you know, offended. Like, that seemed like it was coming up a little short on something that was sort of mysterious and magical and powerful for me. And that kind of bugged me. But I don't think it's an unfair definition, because among other things, what music does is it takes sound and it puts it into time. It takes sound and it divides it up and it lays it out so that we can engage with it, so that we can make something of it. And that laying out in order, in time, is one of the essential things that turns sound or even noise into what we would use a word like music for. It doesn't take away all the mystery, but it gives us something to work with. And I think the traditions that give us Advent come from, among other things, people that are just as human as you and I, and as a result, they knew, as we know if we stop to think about it, that unless we interrupt the drone of everyday life, unless we divide up time in some meaningful and accessible ways, like mini-Sabbaths, it is just going to grind along without change, or at least without change in which we are agents of change. Things will change, and we'll just get hauled along. One way, I think, to filter the noise of ordinary life is a practice like Advent, a month in which we divide up time so that we are, or we can be at least, reminded to stop and look for the embodied presence of God in the world. If you want this in theological language, in traditional Christian practice, Advent is the break in time where we are consciously waiting for God to step into the story in a way that we can see, a way that we can identify with, and even ways that we can imitate. And so that's, of course, what we mark at Christmas, Emmanuel, God with us. And we sing about this sometimes here, this liminal, this at the threshold space of Advent. We come, we cry, we watch, we wait, we look, we long for you, that in-between space of conscious waiting. That's fine, Tim. Those are interesting ideas, maybe. But how do you do that? If you choose a route other than a different edible cannabis product every day, I think the possibilities are as various as the available Advent calendars. I should probably clarify, I'm not necessarily advocating for either daily consumption of scotch or cannabis, but I can imagine how either of those could be part of a daily practice of mini Sabbath. It's not an entirely strange idea that the conscious stopping for even such strange things as that, as an Advent practice, is still stopping. If you think the bar is too low in that illustration, ask yourself what would get you to stop. I want to make one other suggestion, though, perhaps one that's more appealing to the more spontaneous among us, the less calendar-oriented, the less symmetrically minded. I think Santa Claus can help. And this past week, if we happen to be following along in the traditional Christian calendar, which I don't know how many of us do or how many of us don't, but if we were doing that, we would have marked the Feast of St. Nicholas on Wednesday, on November the 6th. St. Nicholas was the bishop of Myra in the province of Lycia, this is 4th century. History remembers Nicholas as a person of great compassion and faith, somebody who was a fierce advocate for the unjustly condemned. Beyond that, we don't know very much about Nicholas. He didn't leave any surviving writings. What he did leave was a legacy of legends about his life. And one of the best known of those legends is a story about a family in which the father had lost all his money. He was unable to find husbands for his three daughters. This story feels like it's from another time, 4th century. In the culture of that day, that made those women extremely vulnerable. And as the story goes, they were on the verge of being turned out to prostitution or some other work of the sort that amounted to selling themselves. When one night, Nicholas appears at their home. And as the story goes, Nicholas lost his parents when he was very young, and his parents were wealthy. They left him a considerable sum of money. Nicholas shows up at their home, and he tosses three bags of gold in through the window, or in some versions of the legend, down the chimney. See where this is going? So, that legend and other legends like it led to the custom of giving gifts on St. Nicholas' feast day, and that particularly among the Protestants in Europe. And when those Protestants, including the Dutch children whose pronunciation of St. Nicholas was Sinterklaas, moved to America, the practice of giving gifts on that day and the patron saint of gift-giving showing up in these bright red vestments to give the children gifts came along with them. And so it's a short linguistic journey from Sinterklaas to Santa Claus, which is how we get Santa Claus. It's just one of those morphed over time things. It's also apparently a relatively short trip from, you know, sharing what you have with others to shopping until you drop. But I think there's a relatively accessible way to kind of redirect that devolution. If the idea of pausing every day in some symmetrical way feels too foreign or too daunting or just plain unappealing, you can't afford the Scotch calendar, no matter how appealing that idea might sound, try this. Every time during the Advent season, every time you see an image of Santa Claus, there might be a lot of pausing involved in this. Every time you see an image of Santa Claus, stop and think about the law of the gift. The law of the gift is something that Jesus taught in the parable of the talents in Matthew 25. Some of you know the story. Three people are given some money by their master. Two of the three put the gifts they've been given to work. They double their money. The master in the parable gives them a well done. The third person in that story fearfully hangs on to what they've been given. They're concerned that they might lose what they have, and sure enough, that's exactly what happens. This parable is easily twisted into a health and wealth theology lesson. So just be aware that I'm aware of that. The law of the gift is what makes it such an easy target, because we could easily think about that story as a lesson in money management. That might be helpful, maybe not least of all this time of the year. But we could also think about it as teaching us about the law of the gift, which, as Jesus taught it, essentially helps us to learn that the more we give, the more we receive. That's the dangerous part to apply. Because where we lose it in plugging that law of the gift into our lives is if we start to treat it, first of all, mechanistically, like this is a way to manipulate the divine into giving us things. What a strange idea. What a diminishment of the divine. And also that we think about this in terms of things. Because Jesus taught it, it was upside down. The idea that the more we give, the more we receive is true in both the donation of ourselves and what we are entrusted with. And if we practice it, one of the things that that practice begins to teach us is what abundance actually is. That it is not, as the wisdom of that same ancient text says, comprised of the abundance of things. That's what saves us from being a handy health and wealth theology. Because the kind of abundance that Jesus is talking about when he teaches about the law of the gift is so unexpected and generous in its spirit that the response of the master in the parable is confounding. I'm not going to go into that today, except to say that if we begin to practice the giving away, the open-hearted giving away of ourselves and what we have, which is the spirit in which the legend of St. Nicholas resides, that's when the law of the gift begins to operate, because that's when we begin to learn the nature of true abundance, which, by the way, doesn't play nice with consumerism at all. More on that another time, maybe. For now, for this Advent season, in this set-aside month, two ideas. Advent, if we choose to practice it at all, can help us divide up the noise of time into something more meaningful and engaging. The way that meter and rhythm help us turn noise and sound into the thing we call music. And Santa Claus, of all people, can serve as a surprising and spontaneous reminder that the gift of the good presence of God in the world is ours to give. When we choose to give of what we have and who we are. That's enough for now, huh? Joyous Advent to y'all. Peace.